All right, let's bring this meeting to order. The Newburyport Conservation Commission meeting, April 2nd, 2019, in the Senior Community Center Boardroom. This meeting's being recorded. First item on the agenda are the March 19th, 2019 minutes. Do we have any comments, questions?
Motion to approve. Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Is that version three?
Yes.
We're going to bring it up.
The latest version.
It made me realize that you don't ever do that, which is like you're just doing it, you're getting it right every time.
So what's going on?
I have nothing else to read, so I...
Oh, you just kept it.
Oh.
You know, exciting, puts me to sleep.
Right. Whatever works. All right. First item...
We should rearrange?
Yeah, first item, we're going to do Palm Island Shellfish Purification Plant, new well.
I'll just announce some information.
Yeah, we'll try to do this quick. It's just for information, but just to bring you up to speed on some of our plans out at Plum Island. For those of you who don't know, I'm Jeff Kennedy. I'm the manager of the Shellfish Purification Plant. Kevin McGowan is the depuration coordinator at the facility. We have the purification plant was built by the city of Newburyport back in 1930, and it purifies soft shell clams from moderately contaminated areas. So we were the only publicly owned depuration plant in the world. So we've created this public fishery, this opportunity for shell fishermen to harvest clams in areas that would otherwise be closed to harvesting because of public health. So this plant has been there since 1930. The state, it was offered up by the city in 1961 to DMF, and the state has been operating it ever since. There's a lot of history here and talks about what the purification is called, depuration, and exactly what is our role in fisheries. And that's kind of important because we are a public fishery. We've created this special public contaminated fishery that allows clammers to go into areas in the Merrimack, both in Salisbury, Newburyport, as well as Newbury, in those contaminated areas, as well as areas in the Pines River, down in Revere and Saugus, and Boston Harbor. So there was a rebuild back in 1982. They sunk two saltwater wells in the sand dunes just north of the old Coast Guard Auxiliary facility. And you can see on your maps the location one and two is the our wells. They used to be, both of them used to be, right in the middle of the dunes. One of them is now a wash. So we're planning to do an abandonment of that well and to sink another new well. The wells are 130 feet deep. They get salt water between 65 and 130. And so they supply 70 gallons per minute. And so 150 gallons, they supply our nine depuration tanks, which are 3,500 gallons each. So each tank takes about 20 minutes to fill. So we're expecting that erosion will continue and we'll need to sink a new well. So that's the plan here, is to try to find a location south of the number one well. And we're trying to locate it on DCR property, state property, just north of the old Coast Guard Auxiliary building, the city property. And you may not know it, but there are pipelines that go underneath the sand there that supply our salt water from the wells to the purification plant. So
it's a dumb question.
No.
Since you are going to get salt water, why do you need to have a well to do that? Can't you just suck up the water from wherever?
It's a good question. Prior to 1982, that's exactly what we did was we withdrew water from the Merrimack. Now, Because of the tides, you would have to wait until it was a flood tide to withdraw water, because otherwise it would be too fresh. But in fact, what was happening, the Merrimack is contaminated. So you were just taking clams and contaminating them.
So it's not clean enough water.
It wasn't clean enough. Okay. So the wells are the envy of research facilities across the world, because it's in a giant sand filter. So they're pretty cool. We want to maintain them and we need them. So that's the idea, is we're going to try to sink, locate another well. It needs to be, the second page is excerpts from our feasibility study done by Weston and Sampson last August. And in it, they recommend, they have the drilling records from 82, and they've looked and they've said, if you keep a new well within, under 100 feet from an existing well, chances are you don't need to do a test well. It's in the same gravel layer. So we're hoping to locate that second well somewhere on that DCR property in proximity to the pipeline that's already there. So we don't want to go too far afield. Obviously, there's a number of hurdles we have to, it may be shocking, I know, but apparently they sunk the wells and there is no easement with DCR. So we have to work out a land use agreement with DCR.
Sounds so
appropriate. How many years after the fact?
Right.
So that's one hurdle, certainly. And there are other hurdles, but...
So is this dark line?
That, yes, is that that's property? The pipeline. No, so that's the actually pipeline, the pipeline.
Oh, okay. So you would be going as much as 100 feet south?
Yes, I tried to make a trapezoid there, but you can barely see it in the color.
Yeah. Oh, that one. Okay.
Yep. And that's still DCR property, just north of both Coast Guard and city property. So we'll, and again, we don't, I don't believe there's any easement across the Coast Guard, the city property now. So there's we have some work to do, but it's... We're just giving you a heads up on our project. Apparently, there's only, we were told, there's only three companies in New England now that have the ability to drill a well that's that deep, that wide, 6-inch diameter, in sand in New England. So we're kind of at the mercy of these three companies. And we did put out an RFR asking for proposals. We got nothing back. So, so it's kind of frustrating. So we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. So at this point, this project has been, the can has been kicked down the road to next fiscal year. We had hoped to try to get something done in this fiscal year, but it's not going to happen. Just too many things.
So is well number two at this point functioning?
They're both able to be used. We're getting the one that's a wash. Is funky, works, and then it doesn't work, and so we think probably the pump is starting to go on that. So the pumps need to be changed every 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Mm-hmm. So
is that the pipe that's kind of sitting on it, has like a cap on top?
Yes.
And you can see it angling in. There's a section of pipe coming in, or is that another?
Well, I think that might be another one.
Okay, that was probably a fuel line thing that was out near that old, what looked like a footing for a pier or something.
Yeah, no, okay. No, it's not that one. So, yeah, a lot of hidden things on Plum Island are being exposed. So. Mm-hmm.
But this was being revealed.
But just when we do come back and talk to you, and we'll... Hopefully we'll have some plans.
So when do you expect to have your land use agreement or easement or whatever from DCR?
I know the commissioners are talking, so it shouldn't take very long at all.
Just curious about the three companies. None of the test boring companies would do this?
It's very odd.
6 inches isn't really that big. I mean,
no, I
it seems very odd.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a biologist, not an engineer, so that's our problem is trying to make an RFR that's a design build So we're kind of at the mercy of these companies.
And it's just this one gravel layer that you're shooting for.
That's our understanding, yes.
Yeah, it's interesting that you go down that deep and it's still salt. You know, you the salt water, I guess it's intersecting way out or something?
Yeah, Diane Regan, who did some of the monitoring back in 1982-83, noted that in the test wells that the tide, when the tide came up, the freshwater lens sits on top of the salt water, and that that interface rises and lowers with the tide, but with a two-hour delay.
Huh.
So even down that deep, it's moving. Mm-hmm. So, go figure.
Now once you have this new well drilled, are you going to have to lay a new pipe over to the plant?
No, we're going to use the existing pipeline.
Oh, okay.
We will have to connect to that
right,
pipeline.
Yeah.
We're going to try not to to do too much.
Yeah.
So if we can limit it both for cost and obviously for permitting.
Yeah.
And abandoning the old well, how do you plan to do that?
Well, I believe in the feasibility. I think I left that part is they're talking about filling it with gravel and concrete,
mm-hmm.
and then with pulling up as much of the casing as they can get, probably dropping it down 10 to 20 feet. Certainly, if there's casing that remains and erosion continues, we would have to go back out there and remove it as time goes on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we realize that's a risk.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't keep eroding.
Hope not.
20 feet should be deep enough.
Yeah.
There's not going to be much else left out there.
Right.
Your plant's not going to be there if you lose 20 feet.
Well, certainly. And we have a USGS marker on our loading dock. And in front of the facility is a storm drain that connects to our tanks, and they drain out the back. And there is not a clapper valve. There's no backflow preventer. So high tide comes up through the storm drain. So if on the storms, we'll flood from the front of the building, not from the backside. And so it actually will come up through that storm drain. And we know, USGS has told us, it's 4 feet, 3.77 inches above mean high water. So anytime there's a big storm, we get water in the building. So you're right, there's gonna be a bigger problem if those wells go. And that day is coming.
Are there any private purification plants anywhere in the state?
Up in Elliott, Maine, there is, and up in Ellsworth now. They're very small. I believe there may be two in New Jersey, and that's it in the U.S. Interesting, in Europe, 50% of all their shellfish are depurated, but it's unusual here. We have better water quality.
That's surprising.
And our illness rates are very low as well, so compared to EU.
Wow.
Questions or any time you can certainly contact me or Kevin down at the shellfish plant. We can answer any questions.
You think you'll do a notice of intent for this sometime in the next fiscal year?
Well, I guess that was we're considering whether it's do an RDA.
Do an RDA or a notice of intent, depending on what the potential contractors come back with.
That's correct.
Okay, right.
So, we're thinking that certainly funding, we have to get the capital funding for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that generally does not happen in the state much before September. So
mm-hmm.
we may put out a contract, but it probably would go, the end date would be next June 30th, a year from this. The 30th, so it would be
time to do it.
Yeah, it would probably be most likely over the winter.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, that's a good time. Yeah.
So.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we get the other things out of the way, and then we can come back to this.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. First, we'll just give the. Company 341 Merrimack Street, the continuance they're asking for.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And request for the extension of the NOI for One Boston Way. There's nothing.
There's nothing new. They just haven't really gotten going yet, so they need the extension.
Well, yeah.
It would expire.
There's a big hole that fills with water all the time there.
Right, but aside from that, they need more time, a lot more time. So.
What were they doing there? I don't remember this.
That's the big building in the.
Transit oriented development. Yeah. Condos. And
yeah, they just started working on that a while ago, didn't they?
Yeah, there was an appeal and some lawsuits for a while.
Yeah.
They held them up a lot.
But they started. It dug a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a big slot over there.
Yeah.
Good evening, Dan.
Good evening.
So it would expire in 2022, I believe. Yeah.
Motion to issue a 3-year extension.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All righty. Back to, we have any. Plum Island updates?
Some Plum Island updates on this, on the emergency due nourishment program. We all signed the emergency certification at the last meeting. We've gotten stuck being able to start again because of piping clover monitoring needs. It must have held us up for a month last year, and it's started to do the same thing again this year, but we finally got approval through DCR and through National Heritage Endangered Species to go out and do the work again under special conditions related to monitoring for any plovers, nesting sites and scrapes and things like that. So we found, then we had to find the qualified monitor. We got the qualified monitor agreeing to do it. Now we need to rent the equipment and get a start date and just initiate the work. But it's kind of good that they handed out that, the shellfish guys handed out their map because you can see where the sand will be coming from, which is right out in front of the Charles facility, just to the, I guess that would be the north of the shellfish plant on the beach there, just sort of in between the high tide and the vegetation line right along the beach is where a lot of the sand, we think we might be able to get about 1,000 cubic yards of sand from there. And then the neighbors are actually having a public meeting at PETA Hall tomorrow night to see if they can fundraise a little bit to buy some additional sand so that the berm they want to build along Reservation Terrace can be built according to the design. If they don't get more sand, they'll just shrink it a little bit. But it's looking like it's moving forward, and they should be starting to work on that in April. So it's good.
So how much erosion took place on Reservation Terrace?
Oh, since last MRBA meeting was a Friday, a week ago Friday.
Right.
That weekend, Daryl Forgione was out there on Friday. We were out before the meeting. And then Monday after that weekend, he said they lost 15 feet of dune, 15 to 20 feet over the weekend with a very mild storm, but it was those high tides.
Yeah.
So they had to close off. You can't now walk out the boardwalk.
Right.
It's closed off because it's such a steep decline at the end of that area. Over by 67th or 69th and that area where we're going to be doing the nourishment. It's hard for me to tell how much was lost over there. I think it was more extreme actually more recently over by the boardwalk. But we did some beach grass planting out there today. Some beach grass planting you can actually see on the map too. This area, this sort of bare area, just to the right of the boardwalk, in between the other pathway and the boardwalk. We were out with JAPA, the JAPA Science Center, and a bunch of kids, second graders, planting out there and teaching them about erosion and things like that.
Gotta love that child labor.
Oh yeah, they do a good job. They get it done. It's really cute. So, and the only other thing on Plum Island that I have is that the brochure is like almost done, and I have proofs of it from the printer. But when I brought the proofs back to City Hall and passed them around the planning office, we came up with like 2 small additional changes. But, and I would have blown it off, except that they were really necessary. So one of them was just providing a contact number for the building department and the zoning, and changing the, where we say contact the building inspector's office or building commissioner's office, we changed it to contact the zoning enforcement or zoning administrator, because that's really who they need to get in touch with now. So that was important, and then we put a contact number for that. And on the very back page, there was a minor thing with the, also with like the contact information, which is important to get right, given that we want to have this thing, you know, we want people contacting the right numbers and emails. So that's it. So now I had to send it back to Bill Goff to have him make those changes on the original, and goes back to Minuteman. Of course, Bill is like super busy right now with all these other projects, so he's like, yeah, it'll eventually get done. We're like 99% of the way there.
Good.
Yeah, and it looks really good. That's all I have.
Okay. It's nice to see they're not making so much noise about putting up blocks anymore, particularly after all those got unearthed.
Yeah.
And you see them just flopping everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
they,
why are we gonna do that?
Yeah. Although you heard what one of the neighbors said about them when he saw the blocks.
Did they move them over there?
No, that was proof. Do you see all the blocks? He sent an email to the mayor and everybody at City Hall saying, you see all the blocks? See? They got buried in sand. See? They work. This was evidence to him that the blocks stopped erosion and built all the whole dune behind them.
Oh. That was the, why aren't they working now?
I don't know.
The blocks were all lined up when they got exposed. Why aren't they stopping
it? So it was looked at in multiple different.
People see what they want to see.
Yeah.
All right, then. On to land subject to coastal storm flowage regulations.
Right. Did everyone have a chance to take a look at those again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Joe and I were talking about what to do. I mean, I feel like they're in pretty good shape. We had already had some feedback from you all and made some changes, made some just edits to the proposed regs. And then we were stuck on this point about sea level rise and what, how much to incorporate into the regs. And the other communities that we were using as models were calling for looking at 1 foot of sea level rise being taken into consideration for planning development, given that that was the historic rate of sea level rise over the past century. And so that's what they were using looking forward. Well, clearly we know that it's gonna be more than what was happening over the past century. Question is, what do we use? And the city's resiliency committee had a subcommittee that was looking specifically at this, at putting together recommended sea level rise projections for Waterfront West to take into consideration in their proposed development. And that subcommittee of the Resiliency Committee came up with a level of what they're recommending to the mayor's office, is that Waterfront West look at 6 feet added on to the FEMA base flood elevations in that area, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a lot. And because the base flood elevation already would require them to be up a little bit, elevated, and then you add 6 feet more onto that, that's asking a lot. Now, that's not to say that Waterfront West can't handle it, because they're already proposing to have all their parking at grade and things will be elevated anyway, but if we were to incorporate something like 6 feet into these regulations, that would apply to everywhere else in the city and to homeowners and developers and other people who can't necessarily raise their project 15 feet or whatever it would be up into the air. Six plus feet, and even if they could, it might not be the most desirable result. So the question is, what do you want to use as a number in these regs? Do you want to go with what has been accepted by other communities and just use 1 foot? Do you want to use a different number somewhere between 6 feet and 1 foot? And if so, you know, what do you want to base that on?
Yeah, I mean, the problem I have with it is like picking a number out of the air, unless you know, among other things, what the impact of these different choices would be in terms of development.
Yeah, so with the resiliency committee, there was a subcommittee that hashed out what the city was going to accept as a sea level rise number. And they were using the, was it BRAG?
BRAG report,
the Boston
Development. I can't remember the exact name of it.
They were using that. They basically settled on the 6 feet. Like, what is it, 1 foot for 2030? I think we're going to go with 3 feet for 2070, I think, and 6 feet for 2100.
So it's graded then?
Yeah. Well, it can be, but, you know, the city's, I think the intent of this committee is to come up with a city-approved number, sea level rise number, and we wanted to add it to the FEMA flood areas, just, you know, like for around Waterfront West, I think it's 12 feet,
mm-hmm.
12 feet AO zone, and just add 6 feet to that. And during my, I'm in the process of trying to draw up maps for the whole, for the report and for all that, and I found out that it was very difficult, for me impossible, to just add 6 feet to the FEMA layers, because the FEMA layers are essentially flat. There's no elevation data with them. And on top of that, there are some along Water Street, there's a 15-foot AO zone directly abutting a 12-foot. And yes, and this happens sometimes. And you can put in a request to change things like that, but currently that's where they are. I think the committee was talking about putting in a letter to get that taken care of. David Chadwick had mentioned it.
A letter of map?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you do? Make a gradation between the two areas?
They got to figure something out, because, you know, they're directly against abutting each other. You're not going to have this wall of water that stops there. So it's an issue with their, I guess, with their automated system or something doing it. But at this point, I found out through research that FEMA actually in 2012 was mandated to come up with a addition of SLR to the FEMA flood zones. But 7 years later, they haven't done it. They're aware of it. They know it's an issue. And I have a little heartburn with us doing it, just because FEMA has said, yeah, we know about it, but we haven't done it. We're not, I guess, they're not sure how to do it.
It's complicated, I can imagine, for them, just as it would be for anybody, yeah.
Because, like, along Water Street, you see that there's clearly the flood zones are based on wave run-up. So some things, it goes further, it's deeper, it goes further in around there, where in other places there's not much run-up, and they, you know, it's kind of more of a static sort of
mm-hmm.
So level. Just circling back, so either the 1 foot approach or the 6 foot approach would be supported by some outside authority, right?
Well, so the BRAG report, the 6 feet recommendation that this subcommittee, the city subcommittee, is making right now is based on several different reports, NOAA reports, and this BRAG report specifically. And the BRAG report looks at likely ranges of sea level rise given different scenarios of, you know, global carbon emissions.
So there's some science behind that.
There's a lot of science behind it, but again, it's a
wide
range.
And the 1 foot one is based on what everybody else has done, or what a lot of other people have done.
Yeah.
I mean, either approach at least is supported by some kind of third party input. Picking a number in the middle is just like, oh, we didn't know what we were doing, so we decided to split the
difference. Well, you could literally throw a dart at the chart and hit a number and, like,
yeah, we decided to split the difference or something like
that.
But we didn't really know.
Well, the committee, is this something that they're going to, that ideally they would continue to update, and it would be something that would be?
I don't think there's been a lot of discussion on that. I think they want to run with something we can use now. And get you know, people thinking
about projected out, yeah, and so forth. And I missed a discussion on this, but is this something that we can just reference that committee findings on?
But that's based on other findings behind it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's so, I mean, there's, yeah, there's stuff out
there. And we're going to get this final part of the report is in its final stages. We just got something from John Eric, was it today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I couldn't print it out for you guys, but it's, he submitted this to the mayor's office today. It's the subcommittee's executive summary of their recommendation of sea level rise for Newbury Fort. And they go through the different reports that they looked at, this NOAA Global and Regional Sea Level Rise scenario for the U.S., Climate Ready Boston, which is this BRAG report. There's a fourth national climate assessment done by
the feds.
Yeah. So they looked at a lot of different data sets and decided that they wanted to choose the most conservative. So if you look at potential sea level rise, a lot of it's based on what happens with global carbon emissions. And they decided to say, well, we don't believe that global climate emissions are really going to go down that much. So we're going to look at the most conservative numbers for sea level rise, and or the highest numbers for sea level rise, assuming that carbon emissions are going to stay essentially the same. So the likely range in the BRAG report, for example, for 2100 is anywhere from 1.8 feet of sea level rise to 7.4 feet of sea level rise. That's the range that you would find in there, what they call their likely range amongst all the sort of carbon emission scenarios. Assuming that everyone stops emitting carbon and does everything they're supposed to now, maybe we only go up 1.8 feet by 2100. Assuming nobody changes anything and it goes up a lot, the likely high end of the likely range would be 7.4 feet of sea level rise. So it's a wide range, and our group chose 6. So they erred on the side of high. You could throw a dart at this, like I was saying, and choose any of these numbers and just say, well, that's what we think.
But again, you might know what the impact is on Waterfront West for various reasons in terms of what their development might look like. But how do we know what the impact is in the rest of the city? We have no clue, do we?
Not a lot. We'll have an idea.
I mean, what would it mean in terms of development that would otherwise take
what
place?
What would it mean in terms of 263 Water Street?
Right.
A lot.
Yeah. We just got the notice of intent for 263.
Water
Street is getting a variance already. They can't meet it even in today's FEMA standards for building in the flood zone. They can't meet it, so they already have to get a waiver from the state building code, which they got because it's an historic structure. So, or they got a exception or something. So there will be cases like that, but then there will be cases that don't get an exception from the state building code, and that then will want an exception from the Conservation Commission regulation so that they don't have to put the building 15 feet up in the air. So those are all things to think about. What the regs do is require them to consider potential impacts to a whole array of coastal flood zone functions and values. So it's a good process for anyone doing a development in the flood zone to go through no matter what, even if we have 0 feet of sea level rise incorporated into it. It's at least requiring them to look at their potential impacts in that resource area. If you add 1 foot, it's asking them to consider some amount of sea level rise, but not a realistic amount of sea level rise. 2 feet is what we asked for on Plum Island already. So we would have some basis in saying we're just extending our existing requirements for Plum Island to the rest of the city. I think that might hold up.
That's a rationale.
It's something maybe to start with, And then depending on what happens with Waterfront West in this report and how it gets accepted and digested by the city, maybe we can always go back in and revise the regs to update the number.
Right, that's something we can do. Just as an FYI, the intent is to share, once this executive summary is sealed and done, they want to share it with the commission too, to see what their see what we think of it. But yeah, the thing is, we can change the regs in a meeting if we want. We can change the
levels. If the city adopts a 6 foot, and we say in our regs 2 feet,
right?
Then what does Waterfront West have to meet?
Waterfront West is all their plan. Their design is already beyond the 6 feet.
They're already up, way up in the air.
They're not going to get affected.
So whatever we do is irrelevant as far as they're concerned.
To Waterfront West, yeah, no, they're way, other than the sacrificial shop area, the first floor is, it's going to be like 18 or 19 feet up, so it's it's going to be out of the flood zone plus 6 feet of SLR.
And what the city is recommending to Waterfront West is our recommendations from the city, not regulations. So they're going to want to meet those. They really, by law, only have to meet the state building code regs, but their city's negotiating with them and recommending them that they do something more. So I would, conceivably, no matter what our regulations say, they're still going to try to meet the city's requests in this case.
Well, I think whatever we put in here should be consistent with whatever the city adopts.
Yes.
And if we maybe just reference whatever document is created.
Mm-hmm. Although I don't know that the city is going to be adopting anything per se.
It's a guideline?
It's a recommendation from the resiliency committee.
Oh.
It's not, the city council is not, I would agree with you. If the city was adopting this into zoning regs or into some sort of like floodplain overlay ordinance, well then absolutely we all have to be on the same page. My understanding with this is that it's not in any way, shape, or form being adopted.
Okay. So, but we can reference the science behind it and choose a number based on that, which is a range, right?
Mm-hmm.
You said,
mm-hmm.
basically, 1.8 to 7 point something?
It's also, yeah, exactly. It's somewhere in there that would be an acceptable, you could go back through all the data and choose one of those numbers and base it on something in there. But the resiliency committee resiliency plan that they're putting together, we're putting together, and this sort of separate subcommittee report specific to recommending sea level rise elevations for Waterfront West. That's going to be, my assumption is that the Waterfront West report goes to the mayor as to give her guidance and the city council guidance and how they want to negotiate with Waterfront West. The resiliency plan will have all sorts of recommendations. One recommendation might be that the city adopt zoning that sets a level of 6 feet plus FEMA for sea level rise for future developments. But that would be a recommendation in the resiliency plan for the city to undertake that process. It's not going to be an adopted.
And they might take the recommendation, discuss it, and back off from it.
And they, exactly.
In which case, if we just go with 6 feet because that's their recommendation,
then we might be
hanging out there.
Yeah.
We're 5 feet above anyone else who even has a coastal flood zone.
What about going with the Plum Island? What about going with the Plum Island one, which we already have, 2 feet? There's a rationale for it. We're just extending that to the rest of the city.
Yeah.
But it's because it's
just
a V zone versus something else. The rest of the city could be an A zone or anything, and it wouldn't be.
That's true.
The rationale's not quite there. I just wonder, somebody is building a house, a subdivision, whatever. Who, as it is now, do they have to go to the building department for them to approve their first floor level?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we do is, in some sense, redundant with that anyway.
Right now it is. Because outside of Plum Island, we don't have performance standards for the coastal flood zone, so they really just have to meet the state building code, which is that their first floor be at or above base flood elevation. If we, and on Plum Island, we require 2 feet above base flood elevation or the highest ground level if base flood elevation is undetermined. And I think that's for the whole island for any substantial improvement or new structure.
Mm-hmm. So if we adopt something stringent, and then somebody goes into the building department for their first floor elevation permit or whatever that is,
mm-hmm.
is the building department going to know that we have a, that this is in a flood zone even?
Well, they always send anything on Plum Island and anything within a floodplain, the floodplain, which is a resource area, has to come upstairs to the planning office for review, and there is a check. There's a checklist.
So you're saying
it's
not gonna, things aren't going to slip through
because
they didn't realize, blah, blah, blah.
Right, they don't slip through now. I would have to check on anything that was in the floodplain, even though we don't have regs for it, because it's a resource area.
Okay.
But this would give us regs.
That's a conundrum, isn't it?
We could say something like 2 feet, which is what Plum Island is,
right.
And or whatever the zoning board adopts, whichever is higher.
Well, the thing with
yeah.
this is we can also do.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can put over whatever number we want, and you know, in a meeting we can switch it to whatever
mm-hmm.
else we want.
Well, that's true, but we're not likely to know what's better. I mean,
mm-hmm.
are we? I mean, how are we going to know that?
No. Higher is generally better in flood zones,
yeah.
but
I'd still like to know what the impact is of these different numbers in terms of what
yeah.
real people want to do with their property. And,
right.
and we're just, that's just, there's no way of knowing that really, is there? You could probably map it in some fashion and somebody could do projections and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, I can show you what the sea level rise is at. I have maps, I'm generating maps of just base
uh-huh.
sea level rise because FEMA has generated those
yeah.
without any of the accompanying.
So, but the assumption is there'll be sea level rise to that extent, and then this would be.
And it's probably going to be more if you get a storm coming in. Because
right.
actually, the fetch is probably going to be farther, and it's probably going to be worse than just adding
right.
6 feet to the.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA flow.
Yeah.
So how much land area are we actually talking about?
Honestly, we could just extend our existing Plum Island regs to the rest of the city. No development or redevelopment should be permitted within the FEMA B or A O zone, notwithstanding foregoing for structures damaged or destroyed by fire. There's all sorts of, you know, allowable improvements and development, redevelopment that you can do, but you can't build something new. And any addition or structure not in the V zone or AO zone has to be built on open pilings and comply with FEMA National Flood Insurance regulations. And then we also say that it has to be, let's see, 2 feet above base flood.
So, in other words, if you're in the floodplain and you're subject to one of these stringent requirements, in essence, you can't do very much with your property, right? Is that
well,
kind of where you're coming from?
I mean, but you can. So on Plum Island, it's flexible enough that if you have an existing building in the V zone or AO zone, you can still add on to it up to 20%. You can still do work, but that addition needs to be 2 feet above base flood elevation,
mm-hmm.
Even if the existing building has a solid foundation. And anywhere on the island, in the AE zone, or even outside of the flood zone, any new building has to be elevated 2 feet above base flood elevation or the ground surface, whichever is higher. So, and you know, we've had plenty of construction out on Plum Island, even with all that, it
right.
just means that we want everything to be elevated, which would look a lot different on Water Street
mm-hmm.
and Merrimack Street, but
well,
Well, in reality, they shouldn't be building there anyway, so.
They could be replacing things.
Yeah. So.
I don't know, no matter which choice we make, it doesn't sound like it's kind of very objective.
Well,
to me.
Julia, were you suggesting that we just say that the Plum Island regulations apply to coastal?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm thinking that they could, but maybe since these proposed regs for land surface coastal storm flow, which have a lot more in them related to the resource area and its functions
yeah.
and all that,
yeah.
that I would keep
yeah.
it like this.
Yeah.
And instead of one for all eight for A zones, the historic rate of relative sea level rise in Massachusetts of 1 foot per 100 years should be incorporated in project design and construction, we could say the minimum for activities proposed in A zones, a rate of sea level, rate of sea level rise of 2 feet per, or whatever it is, 3 feet per 100 years shall be incorporated in the project design and construction. At a minimum for activities proposed in the V zone, they've already got it. In the V zone, it's 2 feet of elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere else is 1 foot of elevation. So, and it should be, it says it should be incorporated in the project design and construction. I don't know. And maybe we do 2 feet and 3 feet instead of 1 foot and 2 feet.
But if the city's got 6 feet, it's
get out the dart.
Yeah, yeah. Which,
but if the city adopts 6 feet by in zoning through zoning after all this, after all the recommendations, then we could update this and
yes,
6 feet.
We can just change it to 6 feet. If they decide to do that, when and if they ever decide to do that, then we can just have a meeting and update it. All
right.
And we'll be done with it. We'll be in.
Is this the only substantive issue that you're aware of? And
we already made a few edits to
right,
this.
Right.
Yeah, so there wasn't really anything else other than
okay.
we were kind of stuck on this.
All right, so I'm sort of comfortable with 2 feet since that's what we have on Plum Island. I'd like to go 6 feet, but if
we
need to have the city adopt.
Yeah, we shouldn't get out front of that, I don't think.
So your recommendation, would be 2 feet, Steve?
2 feet for everything? For
yeah, just because
eight.
It's consistent with what we have on plan.
I'm just trying to get
yeah.
clear on
that. Rather than saying, well, no, let's make this 3.5 and 4.5. And
yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just, that sounds arbitrary to me.
So the thing is, I feel like we should be careful how it's written because we don't want to imply that we think there's only going to be 2 feet of sea level
right.
rise in the next
right.
100 years. Because
right.
that's not really right either. And this says that a historic rate of sea level rise in Massachusetts of 1 foot per 100 years shall be incorporated. We could say a projected rate of sea level rise in Massachusetts of 2 feet per 100 years, but that isn't the projected rate.
No, it's much higher.
Yeah.
Which.
So this it gets a little tricky.
Why do we have to say either historic or projected?
We don't.
We just say a rate.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah.
We should
and
just
yeah,
be careful how we say.
You don't have to characterize it.
Right.
What
a
it is.
Rate. Yeah, a minimum rate, at a minimum, for activities proposed in the A zone, a rate of relative sea level rise, not in Massachusetts, of 2 feet.
Yeah, minimum.
For 100 years.
Yeah, because that basically is the minimum rate.
Yeah.
For
you're
all
right.
projections.
You're right.
It's essentially 2 feet.
You're
so.
Right. So that actually, that works. They could take more into account if the evidence shows that it should be more than that.
Well, yeah, but they're going to read this, and that's what they're going to come
yeah.
in with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or
yeah.
at least
it's
they
right.
have the ability to come in with that.
And then we could say at a minimum for activities proposed in the V zone, a 3 foot elevation per 100 years shall be incorporated in project design and construction.
Yeah. I'd still send them back to something that the city, an ongoing thing with the city.
Well, I think if and when the city does adopt something, we change this.
Change.
Yeah, no, a subcommittee recommendation that hasn't gone anywhere. I mean, we can't really.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I guess
it's
got to, it's got to at least be backed by the mayor, at the very least.
Right.
Well, I'm good with a 2 foot, 3 foot.
The darts hit that one. The darts hit that one.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds right.
It's more than everybody else, but not too much more than everybody else.
And it's at least consistent with what we already have.
Yeah.
Well, 3 foot's not.
Well, 3 foot, but yeah.
But it's a V-zone.
We could keep it two.
I'd actually be more comfortable keeping it at
two
for both of them.
I would too, because given that that's what we have on Plum Island.
Yeah.
It'd be and more than what we're at.
It's more consistent.
Why don't we raise it on Plum Island?
Right.
But they're going to come back and say,
right.
Well, if it's 2 feet
right.
on Plum Island, why is it,
you
know, why is it 1 feet
two.
In?
Yeah.
Two. 2 feet in.
We could put little numbers into a cup and we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time the city council wants to move on changing the ordinances, the zoning to. Increase it, then
yeah, we can
yeah.
rethink it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, in that resiliency committee, have they given, you know, I know they talked about that Waterfront West. What about the water sewer treatment plant?
Oh, we're looking at all sorts of things.
And that could well be different.
We're going to move it to Marches Hill.
You're going to need to.
That's
yeah.
right.
That's
where
that land is. You know, because I know on the repair of the rail trail, they were thinking of raising it 2 feet, but I think they're going beyond that now.
Yeah, they're talking about more than that.
Yeah.
Which is a good, cheap way of, relatively cheap way of putting in a berm to prevent it from flooding out.
Yeah, but again, you know, I think, and rightfully, the city is not assuming that 2 feet is sufficient.
Right, right.
Exactly. Well, yeah, we have somebody doing an assessment of all that too. And yes, in 30 years it'll probably be up on Marches Hill.
So, Julia, I had one other
yeah.
comment.
Yeah.
On page 6 under bullet number 3, performance standards,
mm-hmm.
down in the last sentence it refers to section 1.02.
Oh, that might be for someone else.
Yeah, so.
Performance standards.
Yeah. No, you were on the right page before.
I was, okay.
First paragraph, the end of the first paragraph.
Oh, yeah, okay. When that's the first paragraph, I'll just make it an Section 1.02 above. Right, which.
I'm not sure what that is.
Right, we need to check.
Referring probably from Duxbury.
Yeah, Duxbury. Need a better reference.
Yeah.
So have we agreed
right.
on the
I'll check on that one.
On the 2 feet throughout? Is that
it's a good place
yeah.
to start.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do that and
I had another thing that I was kind of wrestling with. Like I said, I wasn't here on the last discussion. This business about impacting adjacent structures page 5, a proposed project within velocity zone shall not destroy or otherwise impair the function of any portion of said landfill or adverse effect on adjacent wetland resources. I know we get into this, I used to get into this a lot. You put something in and you're going to impact somebody else. And I almost feel like just not saying proposed project shall not, but proof that it not or
right. No, we need
yeah.
We absolutely need to have proof.
Yeah,
shall provide evidence that it will not.
Yeah, I'd like it back to the applicant to prove that it's not going to impact anything else.
Okay, that it will. So, what if we said a proposed project within a velocity zone on beach or coastal bank? Shall provide evidence that it will not destroy or otherwise impair the function of any portion of said landform.
Yeah, that'd be fine. It's just something back
okay.
to them is,
okay.
is all.
Because
yep.
We've been asking for that. But
right.
yeah, it should be codified here that
yeah.
it's required.
Yeah.
You have to work that wording a little bit because as you said it, the proposed
project
is proven.
Shall provide evidence, yeah. So proposed project within a velocity zone.
The applicant
for of a proposed project within a velocity zone
shall demonstrate
yeah.
you know shall demonstrate you know proof that
yeah yeah all right
and One other thing that I had, you know, we start off with this definition and we start talking about the 100-year flood, and we said surge of record or flood of record, whichever is greater. And so we sort of established this is the worst case, and we say it again some other places, you know, whichever is greater. And then we sort of just shifted over in several places and just said the 100-year storm. I'm just wondering if we want to carry that through to make sure it's known that it's back to the definition.
Where are you looking?
In the beginning.
Yep.
The definition.
Okay.
Calls out the 100-year flood,
yeah,
surge, so forth, and it calls out that it's the greatest of these.
Oh, right.
And then later, in definitions, it says whichever is greater. Yet when we talk about compensatory, I believe we say it's just the 100-year flood.
Compensatory flood storage?
Yeah.
That's under the AH zone?
Yeah.
Compensatory to all flood storage on the loss. Not previously used for flood storage, so incrementally equal to the theoretical volume of flood water at each elevation up to including the 100-year flood elevation, that?
Yeah, I mean, we keep coming. First, we establish that it's the highest of the highest.
Yeah.
And then we come back and we kind of turn it into just the 100-year flood. It's okay, I mean, if that's...
Where are you looking, David, where it just references the 100-year flood?
It's... 3B on page, right?
3B?
In the performance standards?
Yeah.
4, 5, 6, 3B. Page 6, yeah.
And I think it does it on page 3C, on page 3C, it says, when it's talking about pollution, erosion, and sedimentation control,
mm-hmm,
it says a significant pollution prevention areas, including all areas within the 100-year floodplain that are within.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a convenient way to do it, but do we mean that, or do we mean the worst of the worst?
Well, we could just, instead of calling it the 100-year floodplain, we could just call it land subject to coastal storm flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's,
yeah,
what, that's what the definition is.
Yeah,
yeah,
first, yeah. Somehow bring it in so that
okay,
we...
So we'll replace everywhere we have 100-year flood, we'll replace it with, or everywhere we have 100-year flood plain, we'll replace it with plants of the coastal storm flow.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It goes back to the definition.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go through that.
Yeah, and you, yeah, because generally I think you, throughout, once you get to there, you refer to land subject to as by the acronym.
Uh-huh.
So you could use the acronym, which is a little less clunky than all land subject to coastal storm flow.
Yep, okay. That's what we're going to use. LSCSF.
LSCSF.
Well, okay. Right, but it, in the definition, I think it should say land subject to coastal storm flowage.
Right, but then
yes,
you have a parenthetical,
yes,
that says LCFCF, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So then you don't have to keep repeating the whole phraseology.
Yeah, yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah, you keep the rest of it, but yeah, just call it land subject.
Just
makes
it a little less clunky.
Mm-hmm.
LSCS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We need to have like a word that like you can make out of the acronym. Shorten it, you know?
I mean, it's a terrible acronym. I mean, it's a terrible phrase.
Yeah.
It's silly.
It is.
Anything else?
I'll make these changes. I'll send around another version, and then we could have a hearing.
Yeah, we have to have a hearing.
Hearing,
accept them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hearing.
And how would that be orchestrated? Are we going to present this to the public, or are we going to?
Well, if anybody comes.
It has to be done.
Well, to hear, I mean, it could be a slow news night, I mean.
Yeah, we advertise it, and those who show, and we can discuss it and open it up to the public.
I mean, if we print the whole thing in the advertisement, we're sure that no one will come.
Yeah, and it also costs us $20,000.
Well, don't we get a special rate from the Daily News?
Yeah,
okay, $15,000.
Yeah, by the way, I put on each of your desks the one new application for the next meeting, which is this Water Street application. Well, that's the new item on next meeting's agenda, which is April 16th. The only other thing so far right now that we have on that agenda is the 341 Merrimack Street commercial parking lot. And I'm not going to
we'll be
at that meeting, but yeah.
So I have a couple questions on a variety of things. Number one, we have a meeting scheduled for July 3rd. You might want to consider not having that.
Okay.
I'm not going to be there regardless.
Okay. Good point.
Others may not.
That's a
really
good point. July 3rd.
I won't be here the week after, so.
Okay.
Has there been any appeal or talk of an appeal for the brewery? Or
not yet, but Mr. Germanara came and picked up a copy of the order of conditions, which just was finalized yesterday because we were waiting for them to give us the revised Pollinator Meadow management plan with the schedule and all that. And they made up a new plan too. They're really good. So they have a plan now that they can just give to their landscaper, which shows in green the exact area that's to be mowed and all that, so it's much better. So that went out yesterday, and Rob came and picked up a copy yesterday.
So he's got 21 days.
He's got 10.
10.
10 days, yeah.
Okay.
So, let's see.
Okay. And my other question was, the pollinator management plan that we approved for the brewery,
mm-hmm.
Evergreen has...
Yeah.
Pollinator with a quite different plan, I think, where they mow it every year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember.
I don't think they're not pushing for the
butterfly.
Talk
about that.
Because
yeah.
It would save them money to adopt this other.
Well, and also they billed it as though they were doing it for the butterflies.
Right. That was.
Yeah, I might want to talk to him.
Talk to him about whether or not it's an actual meadow if it gets mowed. Every year.
I thought they said they were going to mow it every year, which doesn't seem like the thing to do if you're...
Didn't they say something about every 3 years?
I don't remember.
For the brewery, they're doing every...
6 months.
It's actually every 6 years.
But the... I'll check with Tom on the Evergreen stuff. They're still working on some details of the design of that area because... Some of the pathways need to shift a little bit, so they have to update the plans, and they still haven't given us a design for the bridge out to the little island in the water area. So
it might be worth,
it does matter how low you mow it and when you mow
right.
it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to do it late in the fall and you're at least 6 inches high. I'm not sure how manicured it looks.
Patrick
Seacamp
knew what he was doing. To this meadow stuff. Yeah. Okay.
You could tell it was his passion.
Yeah, absolutely. In a good way.
Well, if you want to see, this is what the Merson parking lot's going to look like in at 2100. Really with a 6 foot flood.
It's going to be blue.
It's going to be all blue. Heading way up there.
So we'll matter with
Merson
the flood is still.
When is that, 2100?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could not for the life
or sooner.
Understand why the people
Mark
that, whatever the condo development up there.
Parker Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
Why they were concerned about anything. Yeah, they're like 30 feet above us.
Can I just tell you how often people from Parker Ridge call the office to talk about issues of the, in the, yeah.
Yeah.
They're a very highly concerned group.
Well, if they get flooded, I mean, the city is abandoned.
So they're worried that the Merson project may flood them?
I don't know that it's that. It's that there's a big focus on this conservation land behind them.
Yeah.
And who's doing what in there and what's happening in there and was it allowed that so-and-so did such and such and et cetera. So all I can say is that they're watching the area very closely.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
fine.
Maybe they're but seeing what's happening with the water and yeah. Yeah, but it's funny because we don't really have that much jurisdiction over the woods, you know.
No.
There's a wetland sort of starts down there, but.
Is that a city conservation area? Or?
No, it's not. It was part of the special permit for the subdivision that they have that land back there not be built and it was considered
so
conservation land, but it's not an easement or restriction.
It's just a land use.
It's part of their, yeah, homeowners association stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
Are you done asking questions?
I'm done asking questions. Motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, that's with 2 feet. 3 feet.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to do maths with 3 feet.
And
there's a much bigger. You start seeing real incursions with 3 feet of sea level rise.
So this is only how much feet of sea level
rise? This is six.
This is six, yeah.
This is two, this is one.
Got it.
One, there's not a lot. In some places, there's more.
We're really lucky.
But, yeah, once it starts really coming, it's going to be really coming.
We're going to have a bridge over Paramount Street.
Yeah.
High
well, that's why
you have to
mark your calendar.
Yep.
2100,
right? Which is busy.
But we'll have flying cars by then, so who cares?
Well, you might have a flying car.
I already have. Oh, but somebody figured
sure
out
Joe will have the first
to run my car into the other lane.
Good.
I don't like that. Yeah, apparently this big hacking.
Well, that's a concern with all of this stuff. I mean,